The morning after the day 50 years ago when the Civil Rights Bill passed the U.S. Senate and was on its way to the president's desk, finally, here was the New York Times headline. Civil Rights Bill passed 73-27. Johnson urges all to comply. Dirksen berates Goldwater. Everett Dirksen was the leader of the Republicans calling for compromise by the GOP, and he was berating Senator Barry Goldwater, a presidential candidate, for saying that the Civil Rights Act was unconstitutional, suggesting that people not comply. Other headlines in the Times that day, U.S. stressing it would fight to defend Asia. Commitment to Laos and South Vietnam called unlimited. There's a lovely historical footnote. In 1964, Jill Abramson was a young footnote, nowhere near the Washington Bureau of the New York Times. She would become a Times reporter during the Reagan years. She became executive editor of the Times in 2011 in the middle of the Obama era. Abramson says today she sees very little resembling the rough and tumble but fair fight openness of the Johnson 60s or the Reagan 80s. The political messages are slicker these days, she says, and the walls restricting press access to the centers of power are higher and thicker than ever.
The Obama years are benchmark for a new level of secrecy and control. And in one way that I'd like to take a few minutes to talk about, because it's, you know, created quite a challenging atmosphere for the New York Times and some of the best reporters in my newsroom who cover national security issues in Washington, and that is the profusion under President Obama of these criminal leak investigations. There have been seven of them, and one of them right now threatens my colleague James Risen, who's been subpoenaed in one of these cases. And collectively, they have really, I think, put a chill on reporting about national security issues in Washington. My colleagues who are still there tell me that the atmosphere has never been more difficult to get information, that sources who want to come forward with important stories that they feel the public needs to know are just scared to death that they're going to be prosecuted, and reporters fear that they will find themselves subpoenaed in this atmosphere.
Your reporter Scott Shane talks about this. How close do you think, and he's characterized some of this, he describes it as a real problem. People are deterred by the threat of leak prosecutions. How close are we to declaring the leak prosecution approach of the Obama administration in terms of dealing with sources as a prior restraint, a restriction on free speech and freedom of the press?
You know, as you know, John, because of a landmark Supreme Court ruling, there is no prior restraint in our country. And we also have never had an Official Secrets Act. But using a very obscure provision of a 1917 Espionage Act that was never intended to touch journalists, the Obama Justice Department is pursuing these cases. And I think in a backdoor way, using, as I said, an obscure provision of an old law, they are tiptoeing close to things that here in the United States we've never had.
Stylistically, your colleague David Sanger describes this as the most closed control freak administration I've ever covered. How does that play out?
Well, it plays out in everything from efforts by the White House to limit the access that photographers have to take pictures of the president in public settings, and instead a preference to have journalists rely on photography handouts from the White House. And I'm not, you know, knocking the White House photographers. They're great. But you don't want one source for all information and all imagery about the president.
In the Reagan years, the White House would go over the heads of the White House press corps and message directly and provide access to reporters from local stations in local markets. Has the Obama administration taken this a step further, going over readers and going directly to people on the internet to direct their messages?
Yes, and I have to say I do not begrudge them that. The rise of social media has been a very potent force in our society, and I think the president and the White House would be silly, actually, not to be availing themselves of that channel of communications. To rely on it and completely shut out the press corps, though, I think is an ill-advised approach. And I don't think we're at that point yet. But the amount of friction and confrontation involved in just going about what I see as perfectly normal coverage that in the past wouldn't have even provoked a discussion becomes, you know, a protracted and somewhat exhausting process.
Does dealing with Washington become reminiscent of dealing with Beijing in terms of control of the message, control of information?
No, I think, you know, John, you will have fun making that analogy. But as the executive editor of the Times dealing with the government of China right now, where nytimes.com, our website, and a Chinese website that we launched 2 years ago. Both of those are completely blocked and censored. I would not make that comparison myself.
Jill Abramson, executive editor of the New York Times, thanks so much.
Thanks, John.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.